The good news for us is that God doesn't wait for us to have perfect confidence. Repeat that one more time. God does not wait for us to have perfect confidence. Villains and Victors of the Old Testament series. And what that means is that we're looking at people who either stood against God or we're looking at people who stood with Him. And what we can learn from both groups of people. And so today what we're going to be learning about is we're going to turn our attention to Gideon, who was the fifth judge of Israel, and he was one of the victors. Now, while Gideon was one of the victors of the Old Testament, he was also a man who wrestled with doubt. And as we can see, that this is a reoccurring theme throughout the Old Testament and the Bible. Oh, thank you so much. So as we can see, that is a reoccurring theme throughout the Old Testament and the Bible in general. So today we're going to be looking at a man who asked a question that I think all of us have asked in one form or another. And it's right up there on the screen. Why me? And so what I thought I would do this morning is I thought that I would let you guys look behind the curtain. And what I mean by that is I'm going to let you peek behind the curtain, and I'm going to show you guys kind of how some sermon ideas sometimes come to my head. Oftentimes, when I'm reading a Bible passage, a question will pop up in my head. Now, sometimes it's a big theological question, and we've had some of those kind of lessons here before, but more often than not, it's a personal question. And in this case, as I was reading the story of Gideon in Judges chapter 6, I found myself asking, why did Gideon question God's calling? And I really want you to think about it this morning, because Gideon spoke face to face with the angel of the Lord, and that is the Lord himself, Jehovah God. Gideon had seen miracles that were performed right in front of him on a few different occasions. And yet, he wasn't sure that God had called the right man for the job. And so as I was thinking about that with Gideon's story, another question hit me. And that is, well, what about us? Because you see, we live on the other side of the cross. We have the completed Word of God in our hands, amen? And because we have the completed Word of God in our hand, and we even see how everything's going to end, we can see the whole story of God's faithfulness from beginning to end. And yet, don't we do the same thing that Gideon did? We second guess and we say, who, me? You know, I get it. A few years ago, I was on a bachelor trip with some of my closest friends. And one night, we were all sitting around in the dark, just having that late night guy time conversation. And for any men who have been on a bachelor trip, I think you know the kind I'm talking about, where you talk about life and you talk about what you mean to each other. And so that night, as it was my turn to speak, I opened up about how my life hadn't been going the way that I had planned. You see, I had dreamed of being able to serve and help others in some way, maybe through social work or through teaching or even ministry. But there I was at the time, I was working third shift at a Planet Fitness making $8 an hour. And I told them that I felt like that I really wasn't making a real difference in the world. And to be honest with everyone this morning, my depression had been feeling a little heavy recently, and I had told all of my friends that I had felt really guilty about not being as social as I would have liked, and I was even worried that I was starting to become a bad friend. And that's when my friend Ryan spoke up, and he said this to me. He said, you know, Austin, some of my favorite memories are those times in college when we would just stand out in the parking lot by our cars talking about life, faith, and solving all of the world's problems. And he told me that truthfully, he had always admired me as a friend. And he told me that I was a friend who was interesting, a friend who was funny and insightful, and how those little conversations that I had kind of forgotten about until that point during college, he said that those were some of the most influential moments of his life. And he said that he loved me as a brother. And I appreciated Ryan so much for saying that to me. But to be honest with everyone this morning, inside, you know what my first thought was? Who, me? Because you know what? I still saw myself through the lens of my flaws. I didn't see myself through the encouragement of my friend. You see, I'll never forget sitting there in the dark with those guys and hearing those words that I felt like that I didn't deserve. Words that painted a version of me that I couldn't see yet. And, you know, that's the thing about encouragement, isn't it? Sometimes it lands in our ears long before it lands in our hearts. We nod, we smile, we're appreciative, but inside we think, who? Me? And that's exactly where we see Gideon when we meet him in Judges chapter 6. We see a man who is surrounded by the affirmation of God himself, but yet a man who is still unsure. And that brings us to our first truth to remember this morning when we begin to question God's calling. Now, before we get to that truth, let's set the stage of the story. Gideon's story, as RJ read for this morning, opens up in a tough time for Israel. You see, Israel had turned away from God, and as a result, God had allowed the Midianites to oppress Israel for about 7 years. Every harvest season, it said that the Midianites and the Amalekites would sweep in like locusts. And what they would do, they were stealing crops, they were destroying livestock, and they were leaving Israel with nothing. This wasn't a natural famine, but a man-made one. But it might as well have been a famine. And it's in that desperate setting that we first see Gideon hiding in something like this on the screen behind me. Hiding in a wine press, threshing wheat in secret, just trying to get enough food to survive. And what I believe the most important thing that we can learn from this story is this. What does God want us to remember when we start questioning his calling? And I believe the first thing that God wants us to remember is that God affirms before he assigns. God affirms before he assigns. Judges chapter 6, verses 11 through 12 says this. It says, "The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak that belonged to Joash the Abzarite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a winepress to keep it from the Midianites. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said this. He said, 'The Lord is with you, mighty warrior.'" At this point, Gideon isn't charging into battle. He's hiding from the Midianites. And in human terms, there's nothing really mighty about threshing wheat in secret in a pit. But notice what the angel of the Lord calls Gideon before Gideon had even done anything heroic. Mighty warrior. Not that Gideon ought to be a mighty warrior, or not that one day Gideon would become a mighty warrior. No, God declared that Gideon is a mighty warrior. And that is altogether different. When I was born, the doctors and nurses handed me to my dad and said, "Congratulations, you are the father of a baby boy." And it was from that moment on that my dad was a father. Now, it didn't take him years of parenting to become a father. He was fully dad from the very beginning. Now, did he have everything figured out? You know, of course not, right? But like every parent, he had to learn a lot along the way. But here's the thing about that. It's not that my dad was slowly becoming a father over time. No, my dad had been declared one. And the rest of his life was spent living out that role and growing into it. And it's the same way with our faith. I want you guys to kind of think about baptism. From the moment that we come out of the waters in baptism, we are declared to be a Christian. 1 John 3, chapter 3, verse 1 says this. It says, "See what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God, and that is what we are." Not that we will be at the second coming or when you get to heaven. We're not partially saved or working towards salvation. You are fully His in that moment. Now, when we first become Christians, are we going to learn and grow in the years ahead? Of course we are. Absolutely. But are you going to be saved more in 20 years than you are right now? No. Because God declares who you are right then. And that's exactly how God works with us. He declares who we are, and then we spend the rest of our lives living up to that call. I think what's really beautiful about this is that God often sees things in ourselves that, well, God sees things in us that we can't see in ourselves. Judges 6:14 says that the Lord turned to him and said, "Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?" Now, notice again that God doesn't say, "Go get some more strength and then I'll send you." Or he doesn't even say, "Go in the strength that I'll eventually give you." What God says is to go in the strength that you have. Imagine how different our lives would change if we saw ourselves the way that God sees us. If we could, to illustrate a point, borrow God's glasses for a moment, you know what I believe that we would see? I believe that we would see a mighty warrior looking back at us right in the middle of our weaknesses. And that would change everything. But the truth is, when we look in the mirror, most of us don't see ourselves that way. We're quick to notice our weaknesses, but we can often be very slow to notice our strengths. And I think a lot of times that's why it takes someone else, someone who can see us from a different perspective, to point it out. An activity that I did with the youth group last Sunday is I gave them two different cards. And on the first card, I asked them to write down a strength that they saw in themselves that they believed that they had. And then what I did with the second card is I asked them to pair up with a partner, someone who knew them, and to write down a strength that they saw in that person. And here is what was really fascinating about that activity. In every single case, the strength that the person wrote about themselves was a different one than what their partners saw in the other. Now, it's not that their own strength that they saw in themselves was wrong, but others can often see strengths in ourselves that we just can't see in ourselves. And what we discovered in this activity is that we are often a lot stronger than we think we are. And here's the exciting part about this for me. If that's true when it comes to our friends, imagine how much more true that is when it comes from the Lord Himself. Now, Gideon didn't see himself as a mighty warrior, did he? But God already knew that he was. God already saw the strength that Gideon didn't see in himself. And the good news for us is that God doesn't wait for us to have perfect confidence. Repeat that one more time. God does not wait for us to have perfect confidence. Gideon had just been called a mighty warrior by the Lord. But isn't it interesting that Gideon's first reaction, it wasn't to flex his muscles, but it was to point out his own weaknesses? Notice what Gideon says here. He says, "Pardon me, my Lord, but how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family." From what we see here, Gideon didn't have the resume that you would expect for a national leader. You see, Gideon was from the tribe of Manasseh, which was a half-tribe in Israel. And he said, "And at that, my family is the weakest in this half-tribe." And then Gideon went further. He said, "Not only that, but I am the weakest in my family." So in Gideon's mind, there was no reason at all why God should pick him. In fact, I believe that Gideon saw himself as the last man that God should be picking as a judge for Israel. But notice what God does here. He doesn't argue with Gideon's resume. He simply says, "I will be with you." And he gives Gideon a promise of future victory. Thank God that his will doesn't depend on our confidence level. If it did, I believe that a lot of the things that we do around here would never get done. You see, God doesn't wait to declare you a mighty warrior until you're 100% ready. What God does is he starts right where you are, and then he encourages you to grow into the calling as you go. Has anyone in here ever been asked to volunteer for something at church? Yeah, I think a lot of us have. Maybe it was to teach a class. Maybe it was to lead a prayer. Maybe it was to do the Lord's Supper Devo. And your first reaction is, are you sure that you're asking the right guy? You see, even when people affirm us and they tell us, "No, Austin, I think you would be great at leading a prayer. And I think you would do an excellent job." There's always that little voice in the back of our minds that says, "Not me. I don't think I would do very good at that at all." And I believe that Gideon felt that way too. And what I think that we can really learn from this lesson here as a congregation is there's a lot to learn from God's reaction to Gideon that we need to model ourselves after. When Gideon asks for a little more time, notice that God doesn't get angry with him. What God does is he patiently waits. He says, "I will wait until you return." But also notice what God does. God doesn't give up on Gideon. What God does with him is he walks with Gideon through his hesitation one step at a time. And Gideon does move forward, even if he's still afraid. That same night, God tells him to tear down his father's altar to Baal. And Gideon obeys. But notice when he does it here. He does it at night because he's afraid of what the people will say. Maybe even what the people will do. But here's the cool part. Instead of being disowned by his father once they discover that the idols are broken, notice what Gideon's dad does. He stands up for him. He says if Baal really is a god, he can defend himself when someone breaks down his altar. And the whole community gives Gideon a new nickname, Jerubbaal, which means "let Baal contend with him." In other words, this is the guy who took on Baal and won. And I believe that that is a huge affirmation to get from the people around you. And what we can see on the screen behind me, though, is that yet in spite of this, Gideon still needed reassurance. He lays out not one, but two fleeces just to make sure that God's promises are real. But something that I find interesting in this story is that God doesn't rebuke him for it. He keeps walking with Gideon step by step through his hesitation. And so it is with us. God doesn't get angry when you open up the Bible and you search His Word for the answers. God doesn't walk away from an honest seeker. If anything, I believe that God actually comes closer to us when we're seeking Him, patiently leading us until our faith catches up with His calling. And that brings us to one of the most surprising parts of Gideon's story, is that not only does God, He doesn't just work around our weaknesses, sometimes He actually reduces our resources so that His strength is unmistakable. The third thing to remember when we're questioning God's calling is this, is that sometimes God reduces so that He can reveal. Sometimes God reduces so that He can reveal. Early in the morning, Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, and all his men were camped out at the spring of Herod. The camp of Midian was north of them in the valley near the hill of Moriah. And the Lord said this to Gideon, "You have too many men. I cannot deliver Midian into their hands, or Israel would boast against me. My own strength has saved me. Now announce to the army, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead." So 22,000 men left and 10,000 remained. And you know, this is actually in line with God's instructions from Deuteronomy. Did you know that in Deuteronomy, God says that if anyone was afraid before a battle started, that they were free to go home? And the reason why God did this is God didn't want fear to spread around through the ranks. So when Gideon gives that call, 22,000 men left. And just like that, he's down to 10,000 men. But the Lord said to Gideon, "There's still too many men. What I want you to do is take them down to the water, and I'll thin them out for you there. If I say, this one shall go with you, he shall go. But if I say that this one shall not go with you, he shall not go." So what Gideon does is he took the men down to the water, and there the Lord told him, "I want you to separate those who lap the water with their tongues as a dog laps to those who kneel down to drink." So it would probably look something like this. They were probably kind of laying it down and just lapping it up just like you would a dog, right? Now, how many of y'all, is that your first reaction when you see water? Okay, no hands, right? So it makes sense that out of 10,000 people, only 300 of them did that. Now, if I was getting it, I would be like, the guys who drink water like a dog, that's who you want me to lead into battle? But that's what God said, right? And so the majority of people don't drink water like that. You had 300 unique individuals who did, and that's who God chose to go. Because what God says here to Gideon is this. He says, "With the 300 men that lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. Let all the others go home." So Gideon sent the rest of the Israelites home, but he kept the 300 who took over the provisions and trumpets of the others. Let's see. All right. Now, I've read a lot of scholarly theories about this, about why God chose these men who, kneeled down, right, and drank like dogs. Some are pretty imaginative, okay? One of the most imaginative ones that I've read, like, well, if they're kneeling down and drinking like a dog, they could, like, spring up faster into action if they were attacked. And, maybe, right? It's an interesting theory, but I think that's overcomplicating it a little bit. I think the reason why God did this and He narrowed it down to 300 is exactly what He said earlier. He says, so that no one can say that my own strength has saved me. And that's the thing about God, is that sometimes He will prune your plans to make room for His purpose. It's like when I was considering going into ministry. What God did is he slowly whittled me down. And it's not that God whittled me down from bad things, okay? But I think that he whittled me down from the things that I thought that I needed to qualify based on all the one ads that I saw over the years. So in just about any ministry job one ad that you see, they're going to want you to have a seminary degree. Some of them want you to even have a master's or a doctorate degree. And they want you to be married and have 10 years of experience and have at least 2.5 kids. And so, well, I didn't have any of those things. Instead, what God did for me, instead of those 10 years of paid ministry experience, he had me volunteering as a Sunday school teacher while working a regular working man job at Planet Fitness. And I'm going to be honest with you, at that time, none of that made any sense to me. I really thought as the years were going by that I was really starting to lose some ground here. But I believe that now I can kind of look back and see that God was just removing the things that I thought that I needed. So that way I can learn to rely only on him. Looking back on it, I don't believe that God was punishing me. I believe that God was just refining me. Just like with Gideon's army, he took away everything that I could have used to say that I did this. Me, Austin Drake, I did this all on my own. So that way, when the victory came, there was no doubt who got the glory. And so now I want to kind of turn it back on you guys. Maybe God has been doing some whittling down in your lives as well. Maybe he's been removing some things that you thought you had to have before you could serve him. Maybe it's the perfect job or the right relationship or extra training, the confidence that you're still waiting on to magically get one day. But did you ever think about this? Maybe it's not that you're falling behind. It could be just that God is preparing you. Now, you may look around and say, but I don't have what they have. I don't have the resources, the connections, or the personality. But maybe, just maybe, God is taking away all the props that you thought that you needed. So that way, when the moment finally comes, you will know exactly who brought the victory. Now, Gideon had heard it all before, right? Gideon had heard, "Mighty warrior, go in the strength you have. I will be with you." He had been affirmed by God. He had been affirmed by his family. And he had even been given like a really cool nickname by his community. But what we see here in Judges chapter 7, we see something begin to shift. And it's really cool. During the night, the Lord came to Gideon and he said, "Get up, go down against the camp, because I am going to give it into your hands. If you are afraid to attack, go down to the camp with your servant Pura and listen to what they are saying. And afterwards, you will be encouraged to attack the camp." So he and Pura, his servant, went down to the outpost of the camp. Something of note to notice here in this passage is that when God says that something's going to happen, it's going to happen, right? So when God says that you will be encouraged, you can start looking around because that means that something is about to happen. So Gideon and Pura went to the outpost of the camp. And it says that the Midianites were as thick as locusts. And it says that their camels were beyond counting. And when Gideon went up to the camp, he arrived just as a man was telling his friend about a dream. And it's kind of a weird dream. He says that a round loaf of barley bread came tumbling into the Midian camp. It struck the tent and it collapsed. And then his friend said, "This can be nothing other than the sword of Gideon. God has given the Midianites into his hands." What I love about this part of the story is it clicks. The promises that Gideon had been hearing from God the whole time, they finally hit his heart. What we can see up here in this passage is that the doubts that Gideon had been feeling immediately turns to worship, and he bows down before God. And when he bows down before God, it's not because God's promises ever changed. They stayed the exact same. But you know what did change? What changed is that Gideon's confidence in God had finally caught up to God's confidence in him. Some of you are still in that hesitation stage. You've heard God's truth about who he is and who you are, but it hasn't fully sunk in yet. And that's okay. And you know why it's okay? Because you may not feel it yet, but one day it will click and you'll realize that God was telling the truth the entire time about who he is and who you are. The wonderful thing about God's promises is that they don't depend on our mood. God's promises don't depend on our confidence level, and God's promises don't depend on our spiritual resume. How our confidence grows is when you realize that God's faithfulness has never been based on your perfection. And what we can see here in this story is that even your hesitation can become part of your testimony. Because what that does is it shows proof that God meets people right there in their weaknesses. The same patience and encouragement that God showed Gideon is available right now. You don't have to wait until everything clicks to start living like God's promises are true. You can speak God's promise in faith today. And so what I want everyone to do on their outlines is you're going to see a little blank here. And what I want everyone to do is I want everyone to write down the blank. And then once everyone's written it down, I want us to all say this together and to encourage one another. All right, so all together now. God has called me mighty warrior. I will go in the strength I have. The Lord is with me. You see, Gideon's turning point came when he finally believed what God had been saying all along, that I am with you, mighty warrior. And I hope that hearing that encouragement from everyone in the audience today has encouraged you a little bit as well. Now, maybe you've been in the hesitation stage for a while. Maybe you've been hearing the truth about God. You've been listening to Nils Gourmet sermons, studying your Bible, attending Bible classes, but it just hasn't fully taken root yet in your heart. Or maybe you felt like your weaknesses, maybe you felt like your past or your lack of confidence has disqualified you from God's calling. But here's the truth. Is that God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the called. And God is calling you. For some of you, that calling is the call of salvation, to turn away from your old life, to believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, to confess that he is Lord before men, and be baptized into his death, burial, and resurrection. Now, for others here this morning, maybe you've already put Christ on in baptism, but you've been living in hesitation instead of confidence. And what God's invitation to you this morning is to be renewed and to live like his promises are true. And you know why? Because his promises are true. And we would be so happy to pray with you this morning. So if you need to respond to God's call this morning, whether that is to be baptized into Christ or to have the congregation pray over you, we invite you to come forward as we stand and sing.